Our next case this morning is number 073708, the United States against Gary Credo Wentz. Mr. Bensky.
May it please the court, my name is Lawrence Bensky and I represent Gary Credo Wentz. This is a suppression case about probable cause and good faith. The standard for probable cause is the totality of the circumstances, but necessarily we must talk about those circumstances individually. The issues here involve staleness, foundation, reliability, and good faith. First question is the time gap still a factor in seeking warrants in the Seventh Circuit? The government and the magistrate judge apparently determined that time does not matter in child pornography cases. And they rely on the Watsman decision, which says the opposite. It says that time is only one factor. There's no question it is much less of a factor in child pornography cases than many, many other cases, in part because of the reliance on expert witnesses. But even though these experts say that collectors of child pornography rarely, if ever, dispose of their collection, no Seventh Circuit case, or any case that I am aware of, says it does not matter. Here, it was not included.
May I suggest maybe a focus for you at this point?
Sure.
As I read your brief, and the government's for that matter, and thought about this, the question that came to me was, what more could have been done as a practical matter? I think if you can demonstrate that as a practical matter, more could be done, you've got a pretty good case. Could you help me out there?
Sure. On page 246 of my appendix, I have an example of a cyber tip. Cyber tip is what was relied on.
Mm-hmm.
That tip says, Yahoo does not provide the cyber tip line with the date the account was created, nor the date the images were uploaded. In other words, we are not giving you that time information. Then the next paragraph says, although they do not provide it to NCMEC, Yahoo does maintain some detailed logs of group activity, possibly including an IP address at the time of upload, time/date, and time zone. They do provide time/date. Agent Paulson relied on the cyber tips. They are the principal source of information. The second thing he relied on in his affidavit.
Excuse me, may I just make sure I'm clear? Do you think then that cyber tips could have come up with an upload date for you?
No, but Yahoo could have. What it says is that they don't give it to NCMEC in the cyber tip. All you have to do is call up the person at Yahoo. They have a telephone number. And this is in the compliance guide, which starts on page 283. Of the appendix. And it says on page 285, this is Yahoo's guide, what information can you provide? It says the date account created. And on page 286, it says we can provide group activity logs describing when members subscribe and unsubscribe, post or delete files, and similar events. Agent Paulson, in the warrant affidavit, says he relied on or used, I don't know if he used the term relied, he used this compliance manual, Your Honors. Now, he clearly, and they maintain the documents, there's a retention policy on page 287, at least as long as the account is active and for the life of the group. He can call, he can write, he can send a subpoena, and there's a specific statute under which he can get a warrant. It would have been very easy to do. Why didn't he do it? Because he didn't think it mattered. Time was irrelevant or immaterial, as the magistrate judge says.
Now, what about the time, the average time at least, between the upload and the reporting of the matter? Is there, does anyone keep, or can one get that statistic?
I don't believe so, unless they kept asking for each of the individual ones. And the reason is because by statute, the Internet service providers are not required to monitor their various e-groups, which is understandable because, as the affidavit says, there are millions of these things. At some point in time, and this is speculation, but I think it's the more rational or more reasonable speculation, at some point in time, Yahoo finds out that there are bad images on a website. And Yahoo says, okay, the law requires us to do something once we are on notice, as soon as reasonably possible.
That's what I was trying to give some meaning
says.
To. Was,
as soon as reasonably possible.
Industry standard. Is there some way by which one can extrapolate from the data and say, well, the average time between finding this stuff and reporting it is?
Well, I think the time between when the Yahoo finds that there is stuff and the time in reporting is short.
Right. So we can draw then an inference that they reported the uploaded child pornography within a reasonable amount of time after discovery.
After Yahoo found out.
Right.
But you cannot infer that the uploading occurred at anywhere near that time. Because what do they logically do? They get notified that there's this terrible image on an e-group. They go back, and as they say in their compliance manual, we can look at the postings all the way back as long as that e-group existed. It could have existed for 10 years for all we know. And they go back and look at all of the images then that were posted for the last 10, 15 years, and that's when they notify NCMEC. Now, it would be interesting if we were doing research to go to NCMEC and see how many cyber tips they got for different people. Don't forget, the cyber tips here are only with respect to the target, to Mr. Prideaux-Wentz. There are probably thousands of other people, and my guess, and it's guess, it's speculation, is that you will find a lot of separate cyber tips for different targets right around the same time as these cyber tips, because it's unreasonable to believe that Yahoo sits and monitors the millions and millions of e-groups and, unfortunately, the many, many sexually oriented groups.
How, in fact, do they discover this stuff?
Well, I don't know if it's the manual or someplace.
How is this done?
Someplace that people see it mistakenly by web surfing, possibly. Parents go in and see what their kids are looking at. And I think it's the legislation, maybe, that even says that. Parents do it. People complain. Law enforcement is doing a lot of research. NCMEC, for example, has a list of many, many, many websites that it knows are bad. My guess is that it contacts the Internet service providers to say, what can you tell us about these? None of the websites at issue here, however, were recognized by NCMEC, because if they were, NCMEC would have said, this is a known website for child pornography. They did not do it. There is simply no basis to infer when it occurred, and that is why the agent and the court and the government, to some extent in its brief, says it is immaterial how long ago it was. I don't think there is a holding anywhere, and certainly not in Watzman, that says it is immaterial, particularly when there is very, very little foundation for the opinions it relied on by the expert. The magistrate judge said it does not take a Kierkegaardian leap of faith. I'm not sure what that means, but I think it does take an unconstitutional leap of faith to go from 5, 10, 15 images and only images to saying that a person is a collector, that the person has all these fantasies, that the person is potentially a molester. I mean, you read paragraph 62 to 65, that person that you're describing is a monster. This is a terrible crime.
Bensky, I'm going to ask you to bring it to a close. Your time has
expired. Oh, I didn't say it. I'm sorry. It would be unconstitutional to find probable cause or good faith in this case. Thank you.
Bensky, since your time had expired, but we did ask a lot of questions, you will have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Przybylinski, please.
May it please the Court, my name is Laura Shablinsky-Finn. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Madison, Wisconsin. To answer a couple of the court's questions, within the search warrant itself, in the opening paragraphs, it explains the cyber tip line. And the cyber tip line reports are based on the reporting of sexual exploitation of children by search engines, parents, concerned citizens, and law enforcement. So that's where it comes from. To answer,
I was more interested in the technicalities of how it happened. Please don't spend your time trying to get into that in any detail.
Okay.
Right now.
Within Mr. Bensky's appendix at page 287, it talks about Yahoo's retention policies. And Mr. Bensky talked about the group activity logs, which would be the only place that that Special Agent Paulson could have gone to find out the upload dates, short of looking at Mr. Prudhoe-Wentz's computer. And those activity logs are retained by Yahoo for the life of the group and a minimum of 30 days after the termination of the group. At the time these cyber tips were received, 6 of the 8 groups at issue had been disabled already. So the life of the group was over. There was no life of the group, which meant that there would have been a 30-day window within which to be able to get these logs for sure, and perhaps a little bit longer. But Special Agent Paulson, in his experience, didn't think it was necessary to try to chase that information down, information he more than likely would not have been able to obtain because of what he had already. And what
so there were, though, 2 groups. Just go over that again. So 6.
6 of the 8 were disabled.
And
right.
He never inquired about that. I understand he never got to that. And the
right.
Other 2, though, there would have been some record, theoretically.
Theoretically, yes. In Boy Boys, which is B-O-Y-B-O-Y-Z, which was basically an underwear site, and Child Erotica was posted by the defendant, that site was not disabled, nor was Let's Have Fun 2003, which featured young nude boys playing on various playground equipment.
So why shouldn't he have done that to sort of tie the time frame, since it existed, and it seems like it would be a simple matter to just make the phone call and get the dates?
Well, you can't make a phone call. You've got to get a court order. So it's not quite as easy as that. The compliance manual is here. You can try to get a court order. Agent Paulson did a whole lot of other things, and he did stop short of that. But he stopped short of that based on his experience with these sorts of cases, because at the time, what he knew and what the affidavit establishes is that the defendant at some point sought out, found, and downloaded the 69 images that we're talking about. So we keep talking about this whole, oh, he uploaded a couple of images. No. He had to find them, so he had to seek them out. He had to download them so that he possessed them, so that we know that at some point in the past he possessed all of these images that he then shared or trafficked with other like-minded individuals. So that's what we knew. And of the 69 images, the magistrate says in an extremely conservative finding that at least 11 were absolutely child pornography. You've got 4 images that featured masturbation and a number of other images that featured adult hands masturbating young children.
How long would it have taken the officer, though, to inquire and to find out if this other data was in fact available and to obtain it. How much of a burden would this have been?
You know, I don't know that it would have been a burden, but what I think is that it didn't occur to him based on the information we had. And what we're faced with is a situation where this officer, in his experience, has never gone into a warrant where he hasn't found child pornography, where child pornography has been there before. And so for him,
that was his judgment, but
right.
So a subpoena could have done it. Right.
I think what you need is a 2703D order. But
that's an ex parte order that the government could have provided to
yes.
the magistrate, and it wouldn't have taken a lot of time. Because all you have to do is lay out Yahoo's retention policy, explain what's going on with Yahoo, how you return it and get it.
Certainly, and we do that all the time. And
right.
I oversaw this investigation, or at least once it got to me. And
in answer to Judge Ripple's question, it would not take very much energy or time to do that. I mean, obviously, you have to apply
right.
for it. You have
exactly.
to know the information in the manual, put it on a sheet of paper, get it before the court. But it's not something that involves extensive energy or effort or time.
Right. In isolation, it certainly doesn't. In the face of national investigations, pointing to people who have posted child pornography and being faced with a stack of cases to work on, the agents make judgment calls. And Special Agent Paulson, with my agreement, we thought this was enough for probable cause, and it certainly, in his experience, is good faith. As I was saying before, what we knew is that Mr. Perdue-Wentz sought out these images, found them, had them, and then posted them. But he didn't just post them anywhere. He sought out these eight groups, boys, which featured young boys in underwear, boys only 9 to 16, featuring young boys in underwear, and not just, you know, Fruit of the Looms. We're talking Speedos and striped underwear. So they're specific images, specifically chosen to meet the needs of that group.
Let me just get back to the staleness question. Do you think that in the future it makes sense to get this nailed down so this would not be an issue in the future?
Well, I think any additional information always helps. In this particular case, the best we were going to be able to do is 2 years. Because the last cyber tip came in January of 2004. The best we were going to be able to do is a 2-year time frame. But I think what these cases show is what the magistrate recognized, and that is staleness is a radically different concept in child pornography cases. I can't say that I've never seen a warrant where we've gone in and didn't find child pornography. The times, though, that we didn't is because somebody's computer broke down and they cleared it off. These are people's prized possessions. They don't get rid of them. They're not consumer products like drugs or guns, because to share them, you don't need to get rid of them.
Yeah,
it's a free-for-all.
And I appreciate all his experience, and that was in the affidavit, and that certainly goes to the good faith basis. I mean, you don't have any real reason to. The good faith basis is clearly here when you look at least in my view, when you look at the warrant. I'm just looking beyond this to, in this kind of case, issue a simple subpoena so that the staleness issue goes away. Doesn't seem to be much effort, and you eliminate the issue.
And certainly in any future case that I'm involved in, as the Project Safe Child Coordinator, we will take that extra step because it's a lot less paperwork, certainly. Mm-hmm. But again, I trusted Special Agent Paulson's judgment here and believed that there was probable cause. I think, you know, again, in these cases, people do keep this stuff. And I think the concept is hard because we're just so used to, oh, how long was the gun there? How long were the drugs there? This is just such a different animal, and case after case really supports that. And, in fact, this case is another one of those cases that Special Agent Paulson can say, you know, we went in there and they kept it. I mean, this doesn't make him question his experience and past experiences because, you know, time and again, his experience pans out. It would, however, in future cases, certainly help to take the extra step.
I mean, the whole purpose of a warrant requirement is to rely on something other than an agent saying, hey, I know all about this, Judge, don't sweat it.
Well,
and if there is data available and it's easily obtainable by the government, it makes it very difficult for us to see why that data shouldn't be presented to a judicial officer who can use his own head and make a decision on something, rather than to have to defer, in effect, to the person who, in the system of checks and balances, he's supposed to be checking.
Right, but in these cases, he would still have to defer and rely on that expertise because, again, the best we would have been able to do is a 2-year time frame here. Because there was that passage of time, so there would still have been the need to rely on that expert information. And I would note this was a 66-paragraph affidavit. Special Agent Paulson went in painful detail describing each of these images so that the magistrate could make a knowing and understanding determination of probable cause here. So I would not want anyone to be left with the impression that Special Agent Paulson did sort of a slipshod job here. He really went through a great amount of detail and I think did what he thought necessary to get to that point. And this magistrate has seen a lot of these, and perhaps that's the other factor here. Unless the court has any other questions, I'd simply ask the court to affirm the district court's judgment and conviction order.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Przybylinski. How much time is... Oh, Mr. Bensky does have 2 minutes left. That's right.
Sure. I want to address 2 points. Agent Paulson's experience and whether there was objective good faith. Much of the government's argument is you can rely on Agent Paulson's experience. Agent Paulson, however, has very little experience in this type of case, and that's what counts. He did say he has found child pornography in a variety of places. As to the time, as to the staleness issue, we're talking about paragraph 66, one of the last paragraphs. And it's not his experience, Your Honors. It's the experience of an agent who he talked to. And that agent told him about the person who was arrested in Beaver Dam. Beaver Dam is a notorious child pornography case. That person who was arrested, I believe it says, produced 1,800 pictures. That experience was based on somebody whose business was creating child pornography. So there's no experience in the time issue, on the staleness issue with regard to Officer Paulson. And the one time that he uses is the Beaver Dam case where the guy had kids there and was taking pictures of them. Good faith is objective good faith. I sat down with Agent Paulson. He went through these things. He's a really nice guy. But that's not the issue. Would an objective, reasonably trained law enforcement officer believe that time did not matter? Is it enough to say, well, 2 years is pretty long, we're going to have trouble anyway, so we might as well not find out if it's really 2 years, or if it's 5 years, or if it's 10 years, particularly when we didn't even find out whether there was a computer in the Beaver Dam house? I don't think that's objective good faith, Your Honor. And therefore, I would ask the court not only to find no probable cause, but also to find no good faith and reverse the conviction. Thank you very much.
Well, the court thanks both Mr. Bensky and Ms. Przybylinski for their very fine presentations. The case will be taken under advisement.